able to take care and make sure that those people that are on the block are still taken care of. I was having, you know, like I said, a level of conflict, and going back to identity issues, that was something that I really had to deal with.
Hey, this is Tatiana Swedek, and welcome to Ahead of the Curve. Corey Hackett Green is one of the most humble, dedicated, and talented people I have ever met. He is a self-proclaimed content connoisseur and agent of change, a community organizer who is also a sight for sore eyes. Corey has worked with brands like Crest, Citizen M Hotels, and Express, but his passion really lies in his purpose to serve others. On this episode, we talk about a lot of stuff. Everything from influencing with intention and the importance of being true to your complex, dynamic self, to taking a non-traditional approach to real estate development and combating record-high homicide rates in inner cities by creating positive and educational environments. Thanks, Corey. Although we both reside in Philly, Corey and I met on a JPR podcast called Priority Status, which was moderated by our friend Molly Folsom in late 2020. And we've followed and engaged with each other on social media ever since. Finally met in real life on July 10th, which was part of Corey's community cleanup initiative, Onward and Upward, where I scraped paint off of a wall for the first time in my life. And I was also able to meet Corey's family, his creative partner, Kevin, new friends, and my amazing new self-proclaimed uncle, Pastor Abrams. Corey, welcome to Ahead of the Curve.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you, Tatiana, for having me. I am super excited. And yes, she is real. I finally met her after almost a year coming up, but it was definitely an amazing moment to be able to not only meet you, but be able to serve our community with you. So thank you again for having me.
Yes, absolutely. So I guess to start, give us some background. Who is Corey?
Well, I go by a few titles, and I like the word that you used earlier, self-proclaimed, because I like to call myself an agent of change and content connoisseur. And they are very abnormal titles, but anything that I do or say, I kind of make sure that it has a little bit of extra spice on it so people have to ask questions. So with that being said, the agent of change part is more so with my heart being in philanthropy and really just focusing on being able to add value to my community in any way possible. And then also the content connoisseur side is really just being able to develop my social media platforms, whether it be on Instagram, TikTok, or YouTube, and also professionally on LinkedIn, being able to educate people that need to know what it's like within the inner city, and also developing brand partnerships and relationships for income for myself, but then also, like I said, being able to educate those who follow me. So just being able to combine both of those things has been quite the journey over the last couple of years, but I enjoyed it at the end of the day. I've definitely had my ups and downs, you know, just kind of navigating both of those spaces because they were pretty unfamiliar, but I enjoy it. It brings me joy and it makes me happy at the end of the day. So, you know, the things that matter most for me are the things that I'm pursuing now. So there's not too much I can complain about.
Nice. I love that. You know, you're originally from Philly, but you went to college in Virginia. And that's where you met some of your creative business partners. But what brought you back to Philadelphia after college?
Well, the biggest part of it was not really knowing what I wanted to do after I graduated. I actually transferred into Virginia Tech from Coastal Carolina after spending 3 years there. And then I ended up spending a year and a half at Virginia Tech because of having to go to Monco for a couple of courses to get into Virginia Tech, and then needing three semesters in order to be able to graduate from Virginia Tech. So that process in itself was just a slew of things happening. I know that I wanted to essentially finish my track career and see how far I could go when it comes to running track. And that's why I ended up pursuing going to Virginia Tech. But then after that moment and kind of getting acclimated to a new campus and then pledging a fraternity, Kappa Alpha Psi Fraternity Incorporated, all of those things were happening as I was trying to graduate. So I never really had time to actually settle down and discover what it was that I actually wanted to do. And I remember before kind of making a decision, the track coach at Virginia Tech, who I am very close with, Coach Tim Vaught, he asked me if I would be interested in being an assistant for the team. And it was something that I was contemplating, but something was just leading me and telling me to go home, which I'm glad I actually ended up doing because of a variety of things happening from, you know, being able to study and understand real estate, being able to really take the time to discover who I was and what I wanted to do. And then the most heart-wrenching part of that story was actually losing my grandmother and my great aunt both to dementia back to back and watching that process happen. And I can't imagine what it would have felt like being in Virginia, knowing that these things were happening back home and not being able to do anything about it. So I feel at the end of the day that God leads us back to exactly where we need to go, or he helps confirm exactly where we need to be going already if we're already on that path. So I kind of just let those things happen organically. And like I said, just being home and close to family was what I needed at that particular moment, because I had to experience some things that shaped my life for who I am today.
Yeah, I love that. It's, you know, family comes first. And I had a grandma that suffered from dementia too, and it is not easy to be with them in those final months and even years, but they're still there, you know, whether you believe it or not, they are. And I think it probably meant the world to them to see you come home and spend some time before they left to the brighter place.
Absolutely. And I'm sure you know that, like you said, knowing that someone is still in there and not particularly knowing which version of that person you're going to get on a day-by-day basis is the toughest part of dementia. I mean, I remember walking in the house and she would be like, Lenny. And I'm like, I just got in here. You already calling me somebody else's name? You know, so little things like that, that I kind of had to really overcome myself, because there's a level of selfishness that a lot of people don't necessarily speak about when it comes to being a caretaker of somebody with dementia. You know, you start to consider all the things that, you know, are happening from your perspective rather than their perspective, where it's like, okay, well, why is she calling me this particular name? Or why can't she walk? Or why does she want to chew her food today? Or, you know, why is she screaming and yelling? And so many different things that happen on a day-to-day basis. And it's like, do I actually want to be a part of that? But then if roles were reversed, and they have been obviously because we're younger than them, you know, my grandmother was the same person that wiped my behind, that wrapped diapers around me, that took care of me, that was there for everything, every single thing that I needed. So, you know, it's our responsibility to be able to do that same thing in return. And I think that was the most beautiful aspect of it, thinking about it in that capacity where so many people sacrifice for you and being able to return that favor and being selfless in doing so.
Oh, absolutely. And being able to kind of like detach yourself from your ego, because when you're being called by someone else's name, by a loved one, you just immediately feel kind of like shook and a little bit defensive in a way. You're not mad at them, but you're mad at the situation and your ego is kind of bruised. So detaching yourself from that and really focusing on taking care of that other person, I feel like is always the way to go in so many different situations, quite honestly. But, you know, let's switch gears and talk about how you ended up in the space of content creation.
I love this story every time I tell it, because it's one that's so abnormal. And that's just like, if I had to give my life story a word, it would probably be abnormal. But I remember in 2018, it was, I went on my very first solo trip to Cancun, Mexico. Minded my business, went over there for 3 days for my birthday, and ended up, you know, selecting different excursions that I wanted to engage on when I was out there in Cancun. And one of the trips was actually on a boat where we went to Isla Mujeres, and we went on this boat, didn't know anybody on the boat. And I was just like finding someone that looked like they could take a good picture. And I'm sure, you know, working in this space, how hard it is to find the right person to take a good picture. Mm-hmm. And I was like, all right, I think this person can do it in great faith. And there's always like a specific count where you're like, if you hear 3 or 4 clicks, you're like, all right, I don't want to ask this person too many more times if they could take another picture. So I was just going off with a whim, and then ended up coming back home, shared the picture on social media, and then the repost started flooding. And I remember, and I like to be transparent and vulnerable, I was at Capitol Grill and had one too many drinks and ended up actually having somebody drive me home. It was a friend, not drinking, you know, excessively too much, but enough to not drive. Mm-hmm. But I remember receiving a DM from an account, and it wasn't from an account that I followed, and it just happened to be the Shade Room. So I can only remember that day, like, from sitting in that car kind of in a lackadaisical position, sitting up and saying, wait a minute, the Shade Room just messaged me? I don't even follow them, so how did they see me? And it was from that accumulation of reposts, and they asked me, they were like, are you interested in being reposted for this Thirsty Thursday thing that we're doing this whole entire summer? And I'm like, still trying to gather my thoughts. I sit up and I start responding to it. I answer it. Now, mind you, I don't have any of my social media notifications off, which is something that I highly recommend for everybody just to get away from everything. And I remember sitting on the couch that night, and people started calling me and texting me, and my heart dropped because I had forgot that I even responded to them. So I'm like, okay, why are people saying that? Have I seen what happened on social? And I think that's probably one of the most nerve-wracking things that you can have happen in this particular space. And I open it, and I lie to you not, it's like 3,000 followers hit me, a whole bunch of comments, so many different things happening. And I go to the post, and I'm sitting up there on the Shade Room, which was an account at the time that had over 1 million followers, and just an overwhelming abundance of followers, comments, reposts, shares, all types of stuff happening. And that was kind of one of those times where I was like, okay, what are you going to do with this? And the most challenging part that I think that I dealt with, because identity is one of the biggest parts of my brand, was the fact that, you know, when you are reposted on particular platforms, you also have to understand that the demographic that is coming from those platforms is naturally going to expect more of what they saw you from based upon what is already being posted. And I'm an only child. I don't like sharing too much information. I don't.
Yes,
like
only child team. I love it.
You know best. Yep. So you know how it is. We like our isolation. We don't like being bothered. We don't like talking to too many people. We like things exactly how we like them.
Exactly.
And I was in one of those positions where that didn't matter anymore. So I'm like, okay, Corey, what do you do with this? So the first thing that I did was nothing, because I was under way too much pressure. And I'm like, okay, this is just overwhelming. I don't get it. It doesn't make sense. And I think that Friday, after the day after it happened, I ended up responding to over 300 DMs, because the first thing that I wanted to practice was gratitude and humility. It was overwhelming, the amount of responses and the love that I received, but I also want to make sure that I redirected it in a direction that was going to be conducive for who I was naturally transforming into. But then the other side of it was going back to the demographic that follows that particular platform, was the expectation of me posting shirtless pictures all the time or doing things that were more so provocative, where I was trying to shy away from that. And then me being an only child, I'm like, I don't feel like posting stuff like that all the time. That's not really who I am. Mm-hmm. But I think that was the biggest challenge. And then, like I said, just taking probably over a year and a change to really identify who I was becoming, and started to have speaking engagements and things of that sort, where I'm like, okay. And I don't delete anything on Instagram because I think it's just that important so that people are able to go see this story. But the fact that if you look down on my feed on Instagram, you will see a picture of me in a shower doing a beard ad. And right next to it, I am speaking at Virginia Tech at the 5th Uplifting Black Male Conference. Now, those two pictures have no business being next to each other, but that's who I was. And it shows confliction right there. Like, it shows a lack of identity and kind of the things that I was battling with externally, and being able to showcase that and being vulnerable about, I am a guy that's still trying to figure this thing out. I'm not perfect by any means, but this is who I am and this is what I'm working to become. But then also understanding that there is a responsibility with having a platform. So just being able to cultivate more of my identity and being more expressive about the things that I truly do care about, and being okay with people not necessarily liking those things or not coming for those things. I am who I am at the end of the day, and you're going to get what you get when you see what you see on my platform. So it's definitely been a process, but that is kind of how I got started in content creation. And after developing my platform, I've been able to work with a numerous amount of partners, which I'm extremely grateful for. But like I said, it just comes with maturity at the end of the day.
Yeah, I love that. I mean, I'll say your platforms show that you are, like all of us, a complex person. I mean, we're more than just an ad, you know, we're dynamic. We have various interests, we have various passions. And so juxtaposing those like one photo of you doing an ad shirtless and then another photo of you giving a talk at Virginia Tech, that's who you are, right? That you can be both at the same time. And I think that a lot of people do struggle with that. They don't show their full selves on the internet, you know, and that's for privacy reasons or whatever. But I'm with you there. I'm very transparent through my platforms about mm-hmm. what I'm going through, about my passions. And there is confliction within my day-to-day life and, you know, what I choose to do or not do. So I definitely appreciate that. And that, you know, that kind of ties into the brands that you work with through K3 Marketing and Media Group. So, you know, give us a little bit of a background on how that organization formed.
So that is spearheaded by one of my closest friends, my brother, my photographer, my partner in philanthropy, Kevin Stevenson, which I am extremely grateful for him. We both met at Virginia Tech, and it kind of just started out as him taking pictures around campus, and it was mostly graduation photos. But I remember he took pictures of my probate from when I pledged Kappa and then also my graduation pictures. And we were like, you know, we should try this more often. So I ended up returning back to Virginia Tech because I graduated in 2017 and he graduated in 2019. And we started just working together more frequently and seeking out opportunities in which we could start to develop my personal brand. And then also he was just becoming more and more interested in being able to utilize the camera. So we just put those two things together. And right now it's developing into a company that is able to provide high quality and engaging content. But then also he spearheads a lot of the different things that consist of taking photography of sporting events, weddings, and also other people's personal brands and small businesses as well. So it's kind of just cool to watch that story unfold. And like I said, you know, when you know somebody from college and then watching them develop and being able to grow with them, you know, when those things two mesh together, it's just a beautiful story at the end of the day. So there was no one that I'd rather work with besides him. And also just understanding the importance of what we've learned over the last couple of years and being able to create the narrative and control the narrative, which I think is very, very important in today's day and age, because media is something that is not going away anytime soon. But we also know with the positive impact that we intend to have, if we have access to the, you know, photography and have access to the videography and being able to share these things on social media, that nobody else can tell our story better than we can tell it, you know. So it's just developed into a perfect harmony of things. And, you know, it's no better way to do anything than to do it with your friends at the end of the day for me. So, you know, being able to leverage that for some of our partners, including Crest, Intercontinental Hotels Group, we've worked with them a few times in DC, in LA, and most recently in New York, been able to work with Citizens M. Aldo, we've been able to work with Braun, so many different companies that I could have never expected to ever be able to work with. And then to call my friend, be like, yo, Kev, got another campaign, or to call my friend Ian, who's out in San Francisco currently, who does the most amazing videography work. To be able to do that with my friends is just a beautiful thing. And also Jalen and Tahid as well, contributing towards those video projects. So it's just been an organically developed interest of us kind of relying on our gifts, talents, and our abilities and being able to express those things, and then also making room for our friends to be able to do that alongside with us.
I think it's really interesting too that you guys are all over the country. You're not just all friends in one city. You're all over. So how does that work?
Honestly, we just make it work, because one of the things that happens with us, unfortunately, and on some of these campaigns, they're like rush projects, because when we're engaging with a client, you know, you have to go through the negotiation process, whether it's the pricing or whether it's the amount of content that you're delivering or when you're going to post, and all these different things that we have to go through. And it's honestly just trying to be ahead of the ball more often than not. And sometimes we have not been able to do that, but then at the end of the day, we just make it happen. I'm talking about our first trip to LA last year in November. We were actually flying out to LA, myself and Kevin, and we ended up sleeping in the car till 4:00 a.m. outside of one of the hotels that we were working with. Ended up eating an amazing food, a long list of things that we had for the dining experience there that night, falling asleep while Ian was on his way from Philadelphia to LA. and ended up having to catch an Uber to the hotel. And the only reason that we knew he was there was because we heard the hotel phone ringing. And the guy was like, hello, Mr. Hackett Green. Do you know an Ian Richardson? And I was like, yes. And wow. You know, when you wake up from being in a deep sleep, nothing makes sense. You're sweating and mm-hmm. you're just confused. And I was like, oh my gosh, Kev, we left Ian at the airport. And he ended up opening up the door and he just walked in slow and looked at both of us. And he was like, well, I'm here. And after that, we just kind of, you know, went into our project for the rest of our trip in LA. But these are just how things happen. We just identify what it is that we want to do and we find a way to do it.
I like that. You guys owe Ian something. I don't know what, but
everything, the world.
Yeah. Forgot him at the airport. But no, that's funny. You know, aside from the various locations that you guys reside in, what are some other challenges that you've faced?
I think one of the biggest things is the first word that comes to my mind is humility, because all of us are creative in our own nature. And I think when we have our planning meetings, we have to be able to understand that, well, for me personally, as the influencer, which is not really a term that I love, but understanding that I don't know how a camera works. So I can suggest a multitude of things, but if Kevin is not able to do that or Ian is not able to do that, then it can't be done. And then from their perspective, being able to be flexible in regards to who I am and what it is that I want to do and make sure that I portray on my platform. So I think it's just having those conversations and understanding that there's order and humility that needs to happen in every single conversation that we've ever had. And being able to listen at the end of the day, I think that's one of the things that we've all been able to gain exposure with, is the conversations that we have. You know, we don't override each other, or we don't try to talk over each other, but understanding that there is a way to make this happen. It's just a matter of discovering how. And we're all trying to achieve the same goal at the end of the day. So keeping the first things first and knowing that if we're able to communicate properly, that whatever it is that we want to do, it can get done. But knowing that there is a specific way in which we have to go about that. And I think that just requires the utmost respect.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, one thing I definitely identify with you on pretty strongly is, and we kind of touched on this in terms of personal brand, but in terms of clients and various projects and being able to balance, you know, the diversity of those. Like at one point last year, I was juggling two clients, which were, you know, this posh members only club and then mm-hmm. Philly's largest food bank. Two opposite ends of the spectrum completely. So the content created and the voice that you use on social are very different. Mm-hmm. You work with clients around the country of various sizes and focuses, and you also work on your own philanthropic projects. So how does your strategy and content change depending on your role or project?
I think the biggest thing is really just remaining intact with my core values and then making sure that the partnerships that we receive and also inquire about are in alignment with those core values, because as we talked about earlier, there is a multitude of ways in which you can express yourself, but the core values can't change, because then people aren't necessarily able to discern what it is that you're about. So I think that's been our primary focus with doing that, is always making sure that we refine the core values and identify what it is that we want to display and portray to both consumers and viewers, knowing that they're impressionable. I think that's one of the biggest things that influencers need to understand, is that people are following you for a reason. Therefore, they are digesting your content and they are doing something with it. So knowing that when we are working with a crest, so to speak, one of the biggest things that we were interested in was knowing that Procter & Gamble was supporting Black Lives Matter at that specific time. And then they started to come up with a program that was called Widen the Screen, where they were expressively and outwardly showing their support of Black creators. You know, so that intrigues me, because I have a personal relation to obviously everything that was going on at that particular time, but then also I'm able to be a part of that particular program and showcase the work that we've been able to do as Black creators. So I think those things matter at the end of the day, and not wavering from core values is huge too, because money makes that very, very tricky. I feel like we've all been in positions exactly when you kind of get that dollar amount and you like, well, you know, if I just, it's not going to be that bad, or, you know, I think I can make that work and people won't say this, that, and the third. No, those things are very, very important because you don't want to show inconsistencies in your character, you know? So I think that has been the largest challenge of really making sure that we are doing what we are doing with integrity, because money makes decisions very challenging.
Oh yeah. I go through that every single day. You know, it's hard because we do have to make money, right? Mm-hmm, but and something I've definitely learned to do is, especially in terms of freelance work with clients, is if someone is not sharing the same core values as me, or if it's clearly going to conflict with, you know, how I live day to day and how I want to make an impact in the world, I'm just like, thank you for your interest, but I need to move on. And I have to factor that into my monthly budget and expenses and all that stuff. But when it comes down to it, it keeps you going and it keeps you aligned on your path, I think. At least that's what I tell myself at the end of the day. But, you know, with that said, how do you interpret the term people over profit? And do you believe that there's an ROI in putting people first?
Absolutely. And I think that is probably one of the biggest things that I've been able to learn since Virginia Tech, because it is very easy to get caught up in money and the consumption of money and being able to afford nice things and everything that comes with being able to have money. But one of the things that I learned because of my position from graduating Virginia Tech and not necessarily identifying what it is that I wanted to do was that I wasn't walking into success, or I wasn't walking into security, you know. So these two things definitely shifted the way in which I started to think, and I really started to invest in myself, which allowed me to invest in relationships and bringing value to the table. So I learned that as I continue to do so, that I was able to be more profitable in relationships before I was profitable in actual currency. And the currency will come at the end of the day, but it is oftentimes that a lot of people find themselves being able to generate large sums of income, but actually not being able to develop relationships or doing what it is, which I think is most important at the end of the day, and discovering purpose. You know, so I was able to do those things in reverse, where now I'm able to utilize my purpose in order to be able to accumulate financial resources for me to be able to push a lot of the things that I'm doing right now, rather than, you know, going about seeking a dollar each and every single day. And then in return saying that, you know, one day I'm going to serve when I make X amount of dollars. Well, something that I've learned is that you don't know if you'll actually do something until you do it. And I don't want to let years and years and years go by where I'm seeking money rather than being able to serve my community and trying to drastically switch my way in which I'm thinking in order to be able to do what my purpose is. You know, so I think there is the utmost importance of making sure that you kind of pursue developing your relationships and figuring out ways in which you can serve people, because money will come after you do that. And I can guarantee that, you know. So relationships for me at the end of the day are important. Serving people for me at the end of the day is important. And money will come. All of it hasn't come. Some of it's on the way. Some of it's on back order, wherever it is. I know the money will be waiting on me, but I think fulfillment for me is the biggest thing that I want every day. And I know that a dollar can't bring that.
Yeah, no, for sure. I'm not trying to be that like 55-year-old woman who's sitting at their desk job and realize that I don't know my purpose in life, you know, and then just quit my job and have the midlife crisis. I'm sure I'll have a midlife crisis no matter what, right? But like that, I just don't want to go through any of that. So I'm right there with you. Switching gears a little bit and just bringing it back home to Philadelphia. You know, to date, there have been, I think, 314 homicides in Philly just this year, which is a 31% increase from 2020, but regardless of that increase, it's not a new problem in the city. And you can't only blame the guns. Really, the root cause is lack of economic development and community resources in certain neighborhoods. Like a lot of US cities, the city of Philadelphia has a history of corruption and questionable priorities. You know, we've seen the development of places like, I think it's Market East, or is it East Market? I don't know. I'm still calling it the gallery. So
let's keep it plain.
Yeah, right. But like new builds just popping up all over the city. And we can see where the money is going. But there's also an estimated 12,000 vacant properties in Philly, and about 42,000 if you include lots. And I'm pretty sure, I think it was earlier this year, it was estimated that there are 6,000 Philadelphians experiencing homelessness. So you do the math, that could easily be solved. Now, neighborhoods continue to be gentrified, but the issue is that the development most times is not focused on economic development of the neighborhood itself, which would benefit existing long-term residents. Now, as a lover of sociology, real estate, and Philadelphians, I've watched this happen over and over. I live in Fishtown, but I bike all around the city, and it's really sad to see things that you used to pass every single day just be knocked down. I actually, the other week, I was biking through Sharswood, and there used to be this row of really colorful homes on this one block, and they're not there anymore. And they're, I don't know what they're building, but I'm sure it's condos on a block where there are also three other vacant houses. So it's a really, really weird kind of juxtaposition to look at. But have you seen this lack of focus around the city? And what about other cities in the US?
Absolutely. I think the biggest thing that is happening in the inner city right now are three things. We have gentrification, obviously, then we have miseducation, and then we have lack of education. And I think these three things are contributing towards a lot of the different things that we are seeing and experiencing in Philadelphia and other cities throughout the whole entire world. But I think specific in Philadelphia, I know as I was interested in wholesale real estate that I was learning how the game works. And I know that there were parts of Southwest that I was particularly interested in. I know that there were parts in North Philly where you have Brewery Town, where you have Strawberry Mansion, where you have Allegheny West, a lot of those different areas where you're kind of just seeing things just gradually creep up every single year, day by day, day by day, day by day. You're seeing what we know as row homes turning into Tetris looking houses, which have no business in being a lot of these neighborhoods.
Yep.
And people are getting priced out of their own neighborhoods. And I think that's one of the biggest things that is happening right now. But then also, like you stated earlier, with this happening in a variety of inner cities throughout the whole entire US, I know that I've dealt with different individuals that were interested in purchasing properties from rehab, not actually even being from Philadelphia. So a lot of people that I experienced with personally were coming from New York, because they're getting priced out of their own cities. So you have these developers and people that are interested in developing their real estate portfolio coming from out of town and now buying these properties, having no care or regard for anybody who is on that block, no matter how long your family has lived in that house, if your grandma's still there, pricing them out to the point where they can't afford their taxes, and then ending up buying that property. And like you said, there are so many different properties throughout the city where they're either burned down, not being kept with, or just a multitude of things that are happening, and people are taking advantage of those situations. So I learned that through real estate that I was actually a part of the problem. So here I am, you know, doing all these community service events saying, you know, I want to be an individual that has helped serving my community. And then on the flip side, knowing that I'm having conversations with investors that are from out of state or have no interest in actually developing high quality, low income housing for the people that are living in the communities, or being able to take care and make sure that those people that are on the block are still taken care of. I was having, you know, like I said, a level of conflict and going back to identity issues. That was something that I really had to deal with, you know. So this is something that is happening in every city. And then on top of that, then you have to think about so many different schools that are being closed and how people are being miseducated. And if they're not able to actually go and get a formal education, that they're being miseducated by the atmosphere of their neighborhood, not actually believing that they're able to maintain these properties or even being able to stay in these areas. So all of these three things are happening in every single inner city throughout the whole entire country. And until we put our thumb on it and be truthful about what it is that is actually happening, nothing will change. Well, things are changing, but not in our favor.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. I definitely agree with that. I've seen it. I actually was born in New York City, and my nanny is, I think she's from Barbados, but she lived in Brooklyn, and I'm pretty sure they lived in Bed-Stuy. Way back when, you know, this was, I don't even know how old I am. This was probably like 26, 27 years ago. She doesn't live in Bed-Stuy anymore. I'll just say that. She lives like all the way at the end, I think, of the L, I want to say, L line. I'm not sure. But seeing that change too is insane to me. Just Brooklyn alone. In Philly, I mean, it's so close to my heart too, but I've seen it in New Orleans as well. Detroit, Baltimore, obviously not as quickly. Also DC. And it's
absolutely,
it's a lot of investors that are coming from other cities, kind of really just preying on these lower income cities that are more so working class and more blue collar. And, you know, people who have lived here for generations aren't getting anything out of it. So it's rough, but I think that's why it's important to have these kind of conversations and put, like you said, like your thumb on it and, you know, figure out, take it into our own hands too, and figure out how to help the next generation realize how to build wealth, give them the skills and knowledge of financial literacy too. That's a huge thing, which kind of takes us into our next conversation on the closure of schools that happened in 2012 and 2013. Philly closed 30 schools, which at the time was 10% of the city's total. And most of the closed school buildings were in North Philly and West Philly neighborhoods. And many of the kids were displaced and they had to travel to much farther schools. And those kids were found to be more absent from class, like no duh, right? And which really led to less educational success. I don't see them as failing. I think the system and the city failed them. And I really do believe in real estate as a vessel and adaptive reuse and how those projects can benefit a community which may be struggling in part by a school closure, by businesses closing and those lack of community resources. Germantown is one of those neighborhoods that was greatly affected. I was talking to a friend recently. It's interesting because you can see a lot of momentum in Germantown in terms of economic development, but then there is that juxtaposition of a lot of abandoned properties too. So talk a little bit about what you're up to in Germantown and your special ties to the project.
Well, I like that you mentioned that it was about 30 or so schools that were closed. Now, this is where it gets interesting because my mother was actually a special education teacher at the school that we're currently working on, which is Robert Fulton Elementary School, which is in Germantown. But also, one of the schools that she was a principal at, John F.K. Reynolds, was actually shut down at the same time as well. Now, imagine being close to somebody that experiences a closure of two places that were monumental in their education career. Like, that is my mother right there. So these stories are very fresh to me. They are very close to my heart. They are something that I understand because this is just the environment that I've grown up in. And also, like I said, my mother being an educator. Now, the other part of it is that the high school across the street from Marvel Fulton, my grandfather was actually an assistant principal. So I was meant to be here at the end of the day. And it's just funny how that whole process in itself works. But now we're currently working on the renovation of Robert Fulton Elementary School, which will be a community resource center for children that are in that specific community. Like you said, we have bodies dropping every single day in Philadelphia. That is not something that is new, but just because it is not new doesn't mean that we don't need to constantly be focusing on creating a solution for it that people can actually believe in and get behind, and also leaves a place where children are able to be developed and to be spoken to with positivity, be able to dream and be able to experience being able to grow up as an adult. I think that's something that a lot of us have taken for granted, and looking at who is actually dying, when we look at these homicide numbers, it's a lot of our youth, you know. So at the end of the day, we have an obligation and a responsibility to be able to create a space where they are able to grow and to be able to come mature. I think one of the biggest things that I've experienced, especially with having some of the younger kids, actually being able to volunteer with us, is the fact that we are now teaching them how to create change, but not only create it, but maintain it as well. So we're showing them what it is to scrape paint. Like you said earlier, this is something that most people don't want to do on their Saturdays, but these are moments that—
Oh, it was fun. I had a great time.
Listen, you can tell the truth to me later. I'll just say that. But like those moments like that, I remember as a kid when I grew up going to Home Depot classes every single Saturday. And there were certain things that I learned where I'm now able to utilize those experiences for some of the stuff that we're doing right now. You know, so being able to partake in activities like that, where these kids are actually having their hands in on this project as well, is something that needs to happen. But then also something that we experienced at the most recent cleanup, I actually took a break because there were three kids that ran out of the house and in the middle of us cutting up branches and doing weed whacking and all the things like that. Three kids ran out in the middle of the playground and started shooting on the basketball hoop. It was two little boys and a little girl. The little girl, she brought her nice little chair, propped it up, sat there and watched her brothers, I'm assuming, play basketball. But it was just like one of those moments where you see what you're doing is worth it. Mm-hmm. And then obviously I had to put down the weed whack and I had to go show them that I could still dunk the basketball. My back and my hamstrings are still currently hurting and I paid for that. But when you have an opportunity to be able to engage with kids and to show them that you care, regardless if you know their name or not, it shows how much you actually love the community and the kids that are in the community. And we were able to kind of have a moment where, you know, I was cheering them on, passing the basketball with them, you know, being able to catch alley-oops from them and different things like that, where it was just a moment that you had to make sure that you took care of it and understand that this is exactly why you're here. And then also informing them that this is going to be a place where you can come no matter what the hour is or what's, regardless of what's happening around this community, that there are going to be people here at this building that care. And now, probably 30 minutes after that, an older gentleman, I'm talking probably 80 years old, walked out of the house and he said, what are you all doing out there? And I'm like, just a community cleanup. We're preparing this building to be a community resource center. And he's like, wow, we really need that here. And it's nice to see you young people out here. You know, so I think one of the biggest things that I've taken away from that experience is that there's this level of peace that the older generation can now have because they see that we're active. But then the youth is also looking up to us and seeing that this is a responsibility that you're going to have in a couple of years, but we're going to help you become who we are striving to become each and every single day. So that's what the main focus is right now with that particular building. And I thank Pastor Abrams for his extremely great leadership in spearheading that project and just being able to have my personal touch and investment within that story. Like I said, with my mom being a special education teacher there and walking through those hallways with her where she's like reminiscing on some of the moments that she had and sharing that with me. And that makes scraping paint a little bit easier when you kind of have that personal touch and that story to that building. But I'm just super excited, like I said, and I don't want to find myself ever outwardly expressing that something needs to happen and I'm not doing anything at all. So this is one of those great opportunities where I'm able to utilize and leverage the influence that I've been able to develop through social media to kind of connect with people and say, hey, if you're interested in being a part of something that is going to be bigger than all of us and you want to be a part of creating a legacy, this is your opportunity right now to come out, to serve, to be a part of this great project. And it's for the betterment of our community. And I don't think this will be the last building that we do it in either. And I'll just leave that at that.
I love that. And I do want to say, you know, thank you for inviting me and making me feel so welcome. I definitely, back on July 10th, when I was scraping paint with you, I had this really good feeling that I don't even know what to call it, but it was this sense of comfort that I was doing something that really aligned with my purpose. And I have not felt that in a very, very long time. So, you know, when I say that it was fun scraping paint, it was that feeling that I was feeling, you know? And I hope those kids come back on Saturday, because I kind of want to hoop with them, even though I'm not very good. But
listen, know. All they care about is interaction and the willingness to show up. And yeah, that's one of the things that I think has been, you know, a prominent piece in our relationship, and being able to meet you via podcast and virtually almost a year ago, and now to the point where it's something that we were outwardly expressing, but then being able to serve alongside of you and, you know, partaking in this great project, like just how real it is and how fast things have transitioned to that point. So I look forward to seeing your jump shot soon. Either way, I might bring a basketball out this weekend just so I can see you shoot.
I'm excited. I need to practice before then. We'll see. We'll see how it goes. We'll just play horse.
Hey, listen, we might have to put you on the Sixers the way things look here.
All right. Yeah, I got you. I'll take Ben's spot. But, you know, before we close out, let everyone know how they can connect with you, and if they want to get involved in the project, how to reach out.
Absolutely. Well, once again, my name is Corey Hackett Green. I can be found on LinkedIn by searching my name, Corey Hackett Green, with a hyphen in between Hackett and Green, and with an E on the end of Green. On socials, I am CLH Green, GREENE, on both Instagram and TikTok. And if you're interested in serving with us, which we are extremely excited about, whoever is interested in coming out, all information can be found on our website, which is NMI777.com. We do have one more community cleanup, which will be happening on the 31st, and then we'll probably scale it back and make them larger throughout the rest of this year. And we're also planning an event on the 14th of August at Helen G. Sturgis Playground, which is in East Oak Lane, which is my neighborhood where I'm from. So I'm super excited for both of these events. But like I said, just starting with the Northwest section of Philadelphia and then beginning to expand upon it. So definitely make sure that you follow me for all of that information, or to check in on our website, and whatever it is that you are interested in participating, or whatever capacity that you can, we are more than willing to work with people who are willing to serve. So I can't wait to see everybody out there. And I look forward to changing Philadelphia and the rest of the world with everybody.
Oh, awesome. Well, Corey, thank you for taking the time today to be on Ahead of the Curve. And I really, really am looking forward to shooting some hoops with you and working with you to help build a better future for Philly.
Absolutely. Let's get to it.
Yep.
Hey, thank you again for listening to Ahead of the Curve. I hope that you were able to pull some golden nuggets from this conversation. Don't forget to subscribe to Ahead of the Curve on Apple Podcasts, follow along on Spotify, or wherever you listen to your podcasts, and follow us on Instagram. I got some fun visuals and more content for you. That is at Ahead of the Curve, with a 3 instead of an E. All right, catch y'all soon.